Amen. All right, we have a guest speaker this morning, bringing not just a message but also an update from the organisation Compassion, who facilitate the sponsorship of children all over the world. But for us as a church, we have a particular partnership with the Philippines. In Cebu, the city of Cebu in particular, there's some projects there that if you sponsor a child through Compassion with our church, there's a good chance one or more of the children you sponsor lives there in Cebu. And Simon Ward is back with us, as shared many times and preached many times, but to give us an update about Compassion and also to share a message with us. And I love being reminded of how important this is. You know, the money that, for us as a family, we sponsor children, the money that comes out of our account every month, the impact of that, how significant writing a letter to your sponsor children is, and what the local church and local community is doing on the ground. So, Simon, do you want to come up on stage? It's great to have you here. Would you welcome Simon?
Thank you. That's great. Thank you. It's good to be back with you. And there's always a sense of a bit of a feeling of coming home here. And let me just adjust this. And Luke and Bev, had their newsletter since they moved out. Catch up with their news. So it's again another kind of connection point. Bev used to be the Compassion rep here, and then pass that on to Penny. And there's just connections. And for us in Compassion, it's what we're about. My role used to be called relationship manager. Then people, you say that to people and they think you work for a dating agency, you know. It's but in a sense we do. You know, we're about linking someone like yourself as a sponsor with a child in poverty, and introducing a relationship that we really want to be long term, and to really go the extra mile. So it's really good to be back. Thank you for your welcome. If you don't know much about Compassion, our mission statement is on the screen there behind me: releasing children from poverty in Jesus' name. And that's what we're about. We want children to be have the opportunity to dream, to see life beyond the little kind of the very closeted world that they see. That, you know, can things ever be different for them? Where they've grown up in poverty, their parents, they grew up in poverty, their grandparents grew up in poverty. And it's hard to dream, but for kids, when they get sponsored, they start to find out that their world can be bigger, not only for them, but it can change the world for their family, for their local community, and beyond. And I could be here a long time telling you story after story of the difference that it can make. Just a bit about me, I used to be a Church of Christ pastor for 10 years in Brisbane, and I've been doing this role with Compassion for nearly on 8 years. And I can honestly say I do this for two reasons. One, of the impact that I saw it had on my local church as a pastor, where I saw people not only want to give to mission, but get involved with it. And I had a phrase that I stole from Steve Irwin. You remember the crocodile hunter? And he had this phrase where at the zoo, he would say, don't just look at it, get in with it. I like that. He didn't encourage that with the crocs, but for like the dingoes or the wombats or those animals, he would say, come and do an animal encounter. In other words, don't just stand back and look over the fence or through the glass, but get in the enclosure, sit there with the keepers, have the animals around you, and find out about them. And that phrase stuck in my mind. So when we looked at mission as a church, I said to a group that were kind of exploring different mission agencies, I said, I don't want people just to look at mission or just to give money to mission. I want them to get in with it. And so that was where we started our Compassion journey, and that's where I heard about Compassion. Hadn't heard about them before. I'll see how I go with this. I'm having big issues here with it moving. But with that came a really difficult season for me at church for a number of reasons. All my staff team left in 18 months, and there were 6 of them. And none of them said it was because of me. So one was, just to give you an example, 2 of them I knew were going to be going. They had already told me before that one was going to do some more study, one was expecting a move, didn't know when that happened. We had what lady doing our counselling, 46-year-old, she died. We had someone else who was doing our admin, her nursing registration was needed renewing, and if she didn't go back to nursing, she would have lost her registration. So she did that, and I got to the end of that year, and I was exhausted, lost all my staff. It was just me on my own, and feeling a bit sorry for myself, maybe. And there's some more story in there, but I'd planned to go to Thailand to visit some of the children we sponsored as a church. And honestly, I thought, I just need a holiday. I don't want to go. I didn't feel like going. I felt tired. I didn't feel like ministry. I felt like just having a break for this previous 18 months. But you know, it was the best thing. The best thing. To go and see a church in poverty and what they were doing. It was inspiring. And I do this role because of that trip, of the impact that had on me. It messed me up. And so I say, come on a compassion trip and get messed up. Because we need that. You know, we're a minority country. The majority of the world doesn't live like this. If you're a student, uni student, in Australia, you're in the top 10 to 15% of the wealthiest people on the planet. And we think we're poor and we're struggling. And so sometimes it's good to go and have your eyes opened as to how the rest of the world's living. But then you find actually what your own poverty is, because we have our poverty too. It's just often not material. So we're about releasing children from poverty in Jesus' name. We do that for over 2.3 million children in 29 countries around the world. And it all started because a child stole a man's coat. But that's for another time. So here at the Lakes Church, Jeff has already mentioned that the center point for where you sponsor is the Philippines, and the region is in Cebu, and sponsoring nearly 110 children. Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity that each one of those children have to see an end to poverty in their life and their family's lives. You give them a choice that they wouldn't have without that. Thank you for what you are doing. For some of you, and you think, what does that look like? 80% of what we do is sponsorship. And that means, in essence, it's $48 a month. Little heads up, that's going up to $55 in November. That's the first time it's gone up in 11 years. And if you look at cost of living, it's long overdue. So, but currently it's still $48 a month. And that helps a child with their education. It helps them with their physical needs of healthy food, clean water. It gives them a mentor, someone who will be alongside them and support them, help them to dream, help them to make wise choices at school. It helps them have regular medical checks. I've come back from Indonesia in August. One young man standing here next to his mother, and she said he wouldn't be here if it wasn't for compassion, because on a medical check they picked up a heart defect. That would never have been picked up, and he wouldn't be with us. So just sometimes simple things like that that make a huge difference in a child's life, that in poverty that would never have been discovered until it was too late. So it helps them physically, it helps them educationally, it helps them socio-emotionally. Huge issue, helping them to dream. So every child, when they're in high school, they get to do a thing called My Plan for Tomorrow, where they start to think about, okay, if you could, what job would you love to do? What would you love to do? Helping them to dream and work toward that. And then finally, it helps them spiritually. It's really a discipleship program that we run that help children, whatever faith background, wherever they are, they come to the local church and they not just don't get to hear about Jesus, they get to see him in action by the love of the local church. So that's kind of what we're about. But I'm going to welcome Christine to come up. Christine used to come to this church. She's been a compassion supporter for quite some time, and I've had the privilege of getting to know Christine for with her link with compassion, stayed at a property up there in Gelatin, and I just thought, rather than me talk about compassion, let me ask her some questions of what it's like for somebody who's not employed by compassion, and really what let me say anymore, let me go to questions. So my first question is, I know it's a bit of your story that you've from my homeland, from the UK. You've done a number of different jobs, from banking to a diving company, a whole host of things. You've travelled a lot, so you've seen a lot. You've been in different church cultures, so you've done all of these different things. But you've pretty much stayed very consistent with compassion. So my question is, why compassion?
think mainly it's Christ-centered, church-based, and child-focused. So that's very important, because I don't want to feed and clothe people and then end up in hell. So I thought this is definitely the best option, the best program. The majority of the money actually goes to Compassion as well. It's great, 80-20, something yep. like that. So I just felt as though it was the best option.
Okay. So I've mentioned a bit of those three things. We call them our three C's. If you go to the next slide, I think they're on there. Yeah.
Oh.
So all about Jesus, unashamedly Christian. We want to focus on kids and all those areas I mentioned. And all of that is done in through the local church. And it's the number of times that comes up from supporters like Christine who say, it's because it's all about Jesus. It's because we want it to be, to make sure that our money is going to be used for what we say it's going to be used for, was really important for me. And obviously that's one for Christine as well. So what does that look like for you? So being a Compassion supporter, I know you have a number of facets how you support children. Can you just unpack some of those for us?
Yeah, well, we started off with two children probably about 17 years ago, and we wanted to support more children, but financially it was running a little bit too close to the borderline, so we decided to grow fruit and veg. And that's our hobby anyway. So we had a massive garden and we just had surplus. So that's how it all started, is just bringing, I think the first crop was a massive basket full of passion fruit, and we just came to the church and said, can we sell these and raise money for Compassion? But then it became addictive. So so the veggie garden started off fairly small, then it grew, and now I've got a massive veggie garden that's probably a third of the size of this church or something. And I was bringing it down to church every single week for probably at least 14 years here. So it's lovely to see some old faces. No. Young faces on people I haven't seen for a while. So, yeah, it was a passion of mine to be able to just raise money for Compassion. And we did really want to sponsor more children with that money. But then we've got seasonal stuff. So we've got, in the wintertime, I can grow masses amount of veggies, but in the summertime I can't really grow too much. So we decided the next best thing would be water projects, because the most important thing is clean water.
So just to unpack that, so the water projects, 80% of what we do is sponsorship. In the other kind of 20% or so, one of the things we call them critical interventions, where some people which is what Christine's chosen to do, or maybe a business. And so if you're here as part of a business, you might be interested in that, get to the end of the tax year and you think, we'd like to give some of our profits, some of what we've done, towards a specific project. And so you can choose a number of things, from infrastructure, health, education, water, sanitation, number of things like that, where you can part fund or wholly fund a whole project. And they go from a few thousand dollars up to multiples, depending on what your capacity is. So that's another area that you might not be aware of that we do as well. And some people often balance that with sponsorship. We were chatting this... one of the questions before I get to that one. You showed me a folder that you've got at home of letters.
Yeah, so I keep every single letter from all of the children. I got up to 10 Compassion children eventually. But as soon as the letters from the children come in, then I'll respond straight away. But I keep all of their letters. I keep copies of what I've written to them so that I'm not repeating myself. And it doesn't need to be long. It's only a couple of paragraphs long. But some of the letters I've had in return of how it's changed people's lives, how they've given their heart to the Lord, how they're telling all the friends now about Jesus, it's just amazing.
The letters are a really important thing, and I talk about it every time I go to a church, because it's our area of poverty, that we look at poverty as often as material lack, and we don't realize that our poverty is relational. We don't realize how important the letters are. We think, well, they're getting the money, that's the most important thing, but that is what our culture tells us. But yet, if you look at our suicide rate, you look at how many lonely people, how many people shut in, how many people don't know many people, it's rife through our country because it's our poverty. So I've had children look at me who've never had a letter from their sponsor. I have one young lady from, I think I shared her story last time here, Lee May, her name is, in the Philippines, And she looked at me, never had a letter from a sponsor, and she said, "Don't they love me?" That's what she said. Because her friends are getting letters, she's not got a letter, and it's because it's an important part of life. Is if you're in poverty, if you haven't got relationship support from others, you won't survive. It's a really important thing, and it's hard for us to understand that. And I don't want to make people feel guilty writing. That's not my intention at all. But sometimes it's a blind spot because it's our poverty and we don't realize. Just like it's hard for children to dream about what job they're going to do when all they can see is this poverty around them. It's hard to think they could ever be a doctor or a nurse. Or we have the same thing. It's hard to see that our lives could be really different in terms of relational. It's the same thing. So the letters are really, really important. Christine has a folder. She likes to write by hand. You can write by your computer. You can write on your phone. You can write by hand or a mixture. All of those are available. One last story. I heard this story this week, and with this will come a challenge, which I'll tell you about at the end. But Christine was telling me that before her lovely husband Bob passed away, you had a specialist visit. And can you tell us a bit about what happened there?
Bob was in a lot of pain with whiplash from an accident from when we were back in England years and years ago. So occasionally he'd have to go to an anaesthetist, which is hard to say, to get some nerves in his neck injected. And he used to have to be completely under and to have this procedure done. And the specialist came around in the recovery room just to make sure that he could go home. So he said, you're doing pretty well. Is there anything else we can do for you? And I says, yeah, you can sponsor a compassion child. And he said, funny you should say that. My wife and I have been thinking about sponsoring a child, not knowing which organization to go with. Tell me more about it. And would you please mind coming around to my house at Trinity Beach with some profiles, once I told him about the profiles, and let my children help in the choice?
And he did.
Yeah, and he sponsored.
So there's an opportunity that you to think about. Your capacity to sponsor might be at maximum, but who could you ask? What difference could you make? Because there are people out there that actually want to make a difference, but they don't know where to go. They don't know who to trust. And so someone who knows someone can make a huge difference. So I love that story. Let's give Christine a hand. Thank you so much for sharing with us. Can I give you that? We're going to jump into God's Word in a moment. And then we're going to come back to a video video at the end. But these are the profiles that Christine's talking about. And on the table at the back, there's a number of children from Cebu, from the area that Jeff's talked about. I want to highlight this young man particularly. His name is Joseph. And he's a uni student, so he's in year one of university. And so if you're not sure about sponsoring, or you're close to retirement, or your pension's running out or whatever, if you just think, I'm not sure about sponsoring a one-year-old or a five-year-old for the long haul, what about a uni student? There's five of them, one from Cebu area, the rest are from different countries around the world. But that might be something for you to think, oh yeah, I could do that. I can't tell you how much when a sponsored child is in university and they're coming toward the end of their time at university, they get overwhelmed about what's now going to rest on their shoulders. They've had all this support, they've had the encouragement, they've had letters, they've had all of this going on, and now they're going to have to enter the wild world and be the change that people have been praying for them for. And it's just overwhelming. And two of the young ladies in this picture, I'll share about in just a moment, were in that situation. And they were really struggling, really struggling. So ever since then, I always take university students who need sponsoring with me, because I know how much they need prayer and how much they need letters and that encouragement to help them finish well. So for all of these students, they would have already had a sponsor, but for some reason their sponsors either pulled out, maybe passed away or lost their job. And so I would love to get all five of these sponsored, because I know the impact that it can have on their lives. So I'll tell you more about that right at the end. But let's the message title is on the picture on the wall. That's in a restaurant in Indonesia. The restaurant's called Mana. I must confess, I did doctor the picture. It did say, smile, well, there's pizza. And had an amazing, amazing time in this restaurant as we listened to these two uni students. The translator was also standing there. Just for confidentiality, I won't say which person. But what I found out after what time is that the translator actually had been a sponsor child. And I started to hear her story. And she went through those three things that we talked about with Christine about child-focused, about how she came to know Jesus through that link with compassion, and how it totally revolutionized her life through the local church. Amazing story, where she only knew poverty. She was struggling with being bullied at school. There were holes in the roof of her home, so when it rained, the mattresses would get wet, so they'd have to put plastic over them. If it rained a lot, they would stand by the walls until the rain stopped. And that's what she grew up with a split family, well, not split family, two different nationality, father and mother, and because of that, she was bullied. And then an uncle started to abuse her. So she's bullied at school, she's getting abuse from family members at home, and to go to the local church at the Compassion Program became her safe place. And it's there she met Jesus. She's now done a master's degree in translation, but she chooses to work with Compassion for a much smaller salary than she could get, because she wants to give back in a way that has so changed her life. And her, interestingly, her name means freedom, but as a childhood, she didn't know freedom at all. But now, absolutely, absolutely, a very special time there. It links up with this message title of Don't Look Down, and I must confess I've stolen it from Shrek, the movie. And if you're not familiar with the children's movie Shrek, I think it's the best children's movie. Shrek is a green ogre with a Scottish accent, and Donkey is a donkey, with the voice done by Eddie Murphy. You can kind of get an idea. He just can't stop talking. But there's this scene where Shrek and Donkey, they're going to rescue Princess Fiona from the tallest tower in the castle. And they have this journey there, and a lot happens. But they get to the entrance to the castle, but to get there, they have to cross this rickety wooden bridge, rope bridge. And underneath is a boiling lake of lava. And Donkey's not too happy about having to walk across this rickety-looking wooden bridge. So Shrek says, "Okay, I'll be right behind you." And he kind of pushes Donkey on, and he said, "Don't be afraid, don't worry, just don't look down, don't look down." And Donkey's really still not happy about this, but Shrek kind of shoves him along, and they start to walk, and everything is going fine. Donkey's looking ahead, he's walking along, and he's doing his walk, talking because he can't stop talking. So about halfway across, this one of the rotten floorboards gives way, and his two front hooves plummet through the rope bridge, and suddenly he exclaims, "Shrek, I'm looking down, I'm looking down." And you'll have to watch the movie to find out what happens. But you know, sometimes life happens and we may be going along really well, but suddenly we find ourselves looking down, taking our eyes off Jesus. We're taking our eyes off the goal or where we're heading. Sometimes that happens like Donkey, just all of a sudden. And other times it happens gradually, and we think, how did I get here? You know, I've been going great, and you kind of do a bit of a self-check, and you think, yeah, the kids are doing all right, and I've got a job, and we've got this, but somehow, either spiritually or emotionally or just in life, you find yourself looking down. And I want to bring this message to you this morning. Don't look down. And there's this passage in the Bible that I want to walk through, and it's really about a walk, where two people find themselves looking down. It comes at the end of Luke 24. And just to give you some context, what's happened is it's Sunday morning. Jesus was crucified on the Saturday. He's been in the tomb. He's risen. He's appeared to the women. And then the disciples have run to the tomb, Peter and John. How they have a bit of a race, you know. John got there first. Peter got there first, you know. Bit of competition going on there. And they still can't quite believe that he's risen. They think someone's stolen him. They just, it's all overwhelming. Two of the wider disciples are on their way from Jerusalem to a place called Emmaus. It's about 11K walk, so a couple hours walk. And they're walking along and they're downcast because Jesus, the Messiah, the one they thought was going to deliver them from the Jew, from the Romans, has been crucified. And they are finding themselves looking down. So we pick up the story in verse 13. It's going to be on the screen if we can go to the next slide. So now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. And as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. Do you know that often happens? You find yourself in a situation and you're struggling, and he's always there. Jesus is always there. But you don't realize. You can't see where he is. You don't. He has promised, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. That means I'll never drift away from you and I'll never abandon you. But they didn't realize that he was there. And so he asked them, what are you discussing together as you walk along? As if he didn't know. They stood still, looking down, faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, says, are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that are happening in these days? What things? He asked, again, as if he didn't know. About Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. He was a prophet. He was powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. And the chief priests and the rulers had handed him over to be sentenced to death. And then they crucified him. But we'd really hoped that he was going to be the one who was going to redeem Israel. Just so you know, when they saw the word redemption, or had the word redemption, they didn't think Jesus dying on the cross to redeem sins. They thought to buy us back from slavery from the Romans. Do you know, like, you know, that the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, and then they came out and they were in a sense released from slavery. That's what they were thinking, physical, not spiritual. And what is more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but they didn't find his body. They came and told us that they'd seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. See, they heard all this. They heard about the resurrection from people they trusted. Jesus himself was with them, but they're looking down. You can have all that going on, and you find yourself looking down. And then he said to them, don't beat around the bush, how foolish you are. How slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in the scriptures, in all the scriptures concerning himself. This bit really important. He went through the scriptures that for them was the Old Testament. He went through all of the scriptures explaining what the Old Testament said about Jesus, where he was in the picture. And it's the same thing. They were looking down and Jesus was right in their picture with them, physically there beside them, talking, and they didn't see him. And often it is when we find ourselves looking down, that thing overwhelms us. And we can't see where Jesus is. We can't really understand what he's done for us. Can't really understand that he is alive, that he has sent his spirit. And things can be really, really different. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he was going further. But they urged him strongly, stay with us, it's nearly evening, the day is almost over. In other words, they were saying, it's dangerous on this road as it gets to night. There'd be robbers, there'd be bandits. It's not safe to walk here, particularly not walking alone. So please come in and stay. They were concerned about his well-being. So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread. He gave thanks and he broke it and he began to give it to them in a sense of what we have done already this morning. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him. And he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, weren't our hearts burning within us when he talked to us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? Really important point there. Where, in a sense, you could say they now, on reflection, I knew it was him. You know, there's that kind of conversation going on, because inside there was something more. They knew this just wasn't another person. The way he spoke to them, just something about how he spoke to them, something about his presence caused their hearts to burn within them. But they were so focused on looking down because of what they thought was the big issue, they couldn't see him or hear him until their eyes were open, until this happened. It's interesting, isn't it? Where they'd said, "Don't go any further, Jesus, too dangerous." Now they get up, return at once to Jerusalem, another 2 hours back to Jerusalem. But I have a hunch the journey back would have been quicker than the way there. I think there was a spring in their step and a joy and a delight and an excitement to go and meet with their friends and their colleagues. So there they found the 11 and those with them, and saying, "It's true, the Lord has risen and appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized then when he broke bread. And while they were still talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." So if you find yourself looking down this morning, can I say those words, "Peace be with you"? It's the same Jesus. He says, "I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever." You might have thought, I thought my life was going to go like this. I thought it was going to be like this. Where is Jesus for you at the moment when you find yourself looking down? And you might be thinking, "No, my walk with God is great. I'm not looking down. I'm doing really well." You know, I can almost guarantee you'll come across somebody this week who's looking down. It might be at the servo, might be in the local shop. It could be a friend you visit. It could be a neighbor. It could be a work colleague. I guarantee there'll be someone you'll find, for whatever reason, they're looking down. You could make their day and help them to look up. You could tell them about Shrek and Donkey, and tell them there's a Jesus who can be with you always. This restaurant on the picture behind me is called Manna. And I want to kind of bring what I'm saying to close. It's kind of going to seem like a false landing. All right, I'm coming into land, but we may do a circuit. Anyway, we'll see where we go. This trip in Indonesia was every trip I've ever been on, they're always uniquely special, always. This had a number of things that I've called thin places, and I'll explain that term in a moment. So in this restaurant, it's owned by the people on the left, the blue t-shirt and the grey. They're the restaurateurs. She's the cook. Beautiful food. He manages the restaurant, and the restaurant's owned by her brother. And it's this old Javanese house that was built in 1912, and it's like an old Queenslander Javanese style. That's the best way I can describe it. It's very characteristic. And so we're in this restaurant, and the idea was I'd had a group of pastors there. We're going to meet with two uni students and hear a bit of their story. But the way the tables were laid out, I was down one end next to the restaurateurs, and they had a little bit of English. We had another guy with us who spoke a little bit as well, so we worked it out. But I couldn't hear the story from these uni students because I had two pastors between me before them. So they're chatting away to these students, and I'm just hearing about this restaurant and how it come about. Tell us about this. And they're beautiful Christians. They only employ Muslim staff deliberately so that they can, by the way they are as employers, show the love of Jesus. This area of Indonesia is 87% Muslim. Just so you know, there's a call to prayer happening every morning, so it's quite a unique thing that's going on in this restaurant called Manna, right in the middle of this town called Salatiga. So as I'm listening to them and their heart and their passion for this restaurant and to see people come to faith, this word kept popping into my head, thin place. Thin place. It's not a term that's familiar with many Aussies because it's a Celtic term. And so my wife's a Scot and much more familiar in the UK. And the Celts came up with this term in about the 15th century, where they just recognized that there were some places that you would go to where the gap between heaven and earth seemed thinner. You would know places like that. I could say that the property where Christine is a bit like a thin place. There's just something about the beautiful of the view of just her heart and her passion, and it's easy to pray there. Do you know what I mean? If you've got a place that you go to, you know, it might be walking on the beach. It different things for different people. It's not that necessarily there is something really about that place. It can be multiple things, but just somehow it's easier to connect there. And so the Celts just put this term on, thin place. So someone might come to them and say, I'm just really struggling in life. You know, I'm looking down. And they would say, you know, we're going to pray with you, but there are some people that find there's a thin place. It's called this. And it's just by this stream, go down there, you'll see this tree here, and there's this big rock. And a lot of people who sit there just often find it's easier to reconnect. C.S. Lewis talks about it in some of his writings, and he talks about, I think it's St. Michael's Anglican Church, Evensong was always a thin place for him in his growing up. Another particular hill, I think in Somerset, was a real place for him, and he said that was one of my thin places. And if you look at, it's not a biblical term, but the concept is there. You could say Moses and the burning bush. You know, when Moses is there, it's a thin place. The gap between heaven and earth is like non-existent, because there's God speaking from a bush. And he says to Moses, this is a holy place. Let me change that. This is a thin place. Take off your shoes, Moses. And then there's an interaction that happens. There's multiple stories like that for Elijah at the mouth of the cave where he hears God's whisper speak. A thin place. The tree at Mamre, maybe for Abraham. For Jacob, when he has this dream of this stairway to heaven and then he wrestles with the angel. A thin place. So you can go right through the Old Testament, multiple ones of those. But when you get to the New Testament, it changes. Jesus becomes the thin place. There's always something going on. A friend of mine wrote a child story version of the demons being driven out of Legion. And he, in the story, he adds this poetic license of two Roman soldiers sitting beneath a cliff on the beach, just kind of out of the way, having their coffee break. And I said, have you heard of this, all these things going on about Jesus? Oh, I don't believe that rubbish. Pigs might fly. And then all of a sudden, all these pigs kind of... And there's always something going on with Jesus around. It was a thin place. But you know, the disciples then became thin places. If you think about Peter, even when his shadow passed over someone who was sick, they got better. Thin place. And so this was kind of racing through my mind as they were talking about this restaurant. I thought, they want their restaurant to be a thin place. So I explained the concept to them. And they said, yes, that's it. Absolutely, that's our ache, that's our longing. I said, can I pray that your restaurant will be a thin place? And I must confess my lack of faith here. I was thinking down the track. Can't we do that with prayer, doesn't it? God, would you please bless this person? Would you help them with this? And we're kind of thinking, yeah, it's going to happen sometime down the road. I wasn't thinking now. That was not in my, for whatever reason. But I was thinking, I would love this restaurant to gradually become more and more of a thin place. I think that was probably the concept in my mind. And they said, please. So I shut my eyes and I began to pray. And as soon as I prayed, a picture memory rushed into my mind. This would have been 15 to 20 years previous, 20 years previous, in our local neighborhood, where a neighbor of ours had come to faith, and she was going to get baptized, baptism today. And another neighbor, three doors down, her name was Trish, and she had a baby boy, same name and same age as my youngest son, both called Josh. And she said, I'd like to come to Sally's baptism. She wasn't a believer, hadn't really been to church much before, and she came to church with us. We walked there, and she walked in and had the normal welcome and sat down and then just started to cry. And she wept through the whole service. She's crying before, like our welcome wasn't bad, you know, and it wasn't like that exceptional that it made her weep. We had CD in those days, CD music playing in the background, some of you remember that. But she just wept through the whole thing. Sobbed, not like weeping uncontrollably, but she just sobbed quietly the whole service. And I got to the end and she turned to my wife and said, "Why am I crying?" And in essence, my wife said, "It's because this is a thin place." You know, when we gather like this, it should always be a thin place. It should always be a thin place. You know, Jesus said, whenever two or three gather in my name, there I'll be in the midst. It's not always that way, but it should be, and the opportunity is certainly there for it to be a thin place. And so my wife talked to Trish about God's presence and maybe what's going on in her life and maybe her need of him, and they talked some more. And with that running through my mind, I prayed there'd be a time coming where there'd be people at tables in this restaurant that would just start to cry because this is a thin place. Within 5 minutes, these two uni students were at the table weeping. And I thought, oh, little faith. And it turned into the most memorable time ever in this restaurant as these pastors then gathered around these young ladies and started to pray for them. As Muslim waitresses looked on with interest and curiosity as to what was going on. This was in April, and then in August I was back there again, same restaurant, got the chance to meet up with this beautiful couple again and had another amazing time, but that's for another time. Thin place. My wife is a healthcare worker and I'm passionate about being Jesus at work in an appropriate way, as you can do in that industry. She had someone come to her recently, a staff member, not a believer, actually an atheist, and they said to her, "I don't know what it is, whenever I'm with you, I feel I want to cry." My wife turned to her and said, "Why do you think that might be?" She was curious. She knew. Thin place. She's a thin place at work. And this person said, "I don't know, really. Maybe because you're so kind." See, if we go in our workplaces and in the servo and we're just being Jesus, we take him. You know, Paul says, your body, just get that right, your physical body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. So wherever you go, he goes. But sometimes we find ourselves so looking down and so thinking about ourselves and what someone might think or what they might say or those kind of things that we forget we carry his presence. We forget that we're a thin place. We forget that we can have a huge impact to those around us and grabbing the opportunities that are there. My wife has multiple stories of that. We've been doing a bit together where she's just sharing more of those stories from the workplace of how she's just seen incredible transformation there. If you're curious and you'd like to know more, she's just been asked to speak at a conference in Mount Tambourine next Easter on that topic about transformation in the workplace because it's so needed. But not forcing Jesus on people, being Jesus among people. And that's how compassion works. If you come on a trip, come and get messed up. There's a trip to Thailand I'm leading. If you not got children in Cebu and you just want to, you're interested in more, come on a trip and get messed up. Come and find some thin places and see what God might do in your life. I want to wrap up with a video. I'm doing this right at the end because I find it really hard to speak after this video. And it's from the Philippines. It's a dad, he has two children, he's a former sponsored child, his name is Anjo. And he was interviewed by some of our media team. The video, I find, is quite raw, and how it finishes is how the interview finished. You'll understand that when you see it. But just want you to hear some emotion, hear some heart, hear and see the difference that sponsorship makes in a child's life, and then I'll come back and pray at the end. But let's have a watch the screen. Thank you.
My childhood life was a very challenging. When we are studying, we have to share pencils. The pencil, you must sharpen it will get smaller. But we must use it until it will be, you know, until the eraser or the pencil will get smaller. We lose some hopes because we think we are not getting to high school. Our house is at the back of our church. We have a small window. I can see people are playing. I started go to church 4 years old. I remember I was playing outside. My mother called me, "Angel, you'll take some pictures and they will register you." Compassion Ministry has provided us school supplies, more friends, more connection to others. Also, my sponsor give me a gift every birthdays, so we don't have to share some pencils, some socks, some bags. I remember I said, now I can go to high school. Now I can go to college because of this program. I can feel that every time I wrote the letter to my sponsor, I just imagine I was talking to her face to face. Surprisingly, my sponsor gave it a fund to buy a guitar. It's like an engine to my faith. So I want to give best to God by serving and by playing guitar. Since we started our business to have this printing shop, I said to my wife that this is a business, but it is also a ministry. Back then when I was child, we were struggling with school supplies. And right now, I'm selling school supplies now. Sometimes I sell the school supplies, especially to the kids, on cheaper price. And sometimes it's free because I've been there, it's hard. I have two kids. It brings me a joy that I can provide. If my sponsor was here, or if my sponsor was watching me, she changed my life. I just want to hug her. We're changing my life, my situation, releasing me from poverty, and releasing me from spiritual poverty.
I don't think I need to say any more, do I? So I'm going to pray, and afterwards there's a chance to come and sponsor a child like Andrew and make a difference in their lives. Myself and Christina will be at the table. Come, if you've got questions, please come and ask. Also remember about yourself being a thin place. People are in poverty around you, spiritual poverty, relational poverty. Be a thin place in the workplace. There's another challenge. It might be that you don't have the capacity to sponsor another child. But could you take a profile and see if you could get that child sponsored? Like Christine mentioned about saying to someone, what else can I do for you? Well, you could sponsor a child to multiply that. You know people that I don't know that I might never get to speak to. So there's an opportunity there. I'll tell you more about that if that's an option for you to say, no, I could do that. I could go to a family member or a neighbor. Let me pray. Father, thank you that you've not left us as orphans, but you've sent your Spirit, as you promised, to not just be with us, but to be in us. Father, thank you that we have this potential to be a thin place all the time, wherever we are. And I pray for every person in this room. Father, for those that are finding themselves looking down, for those that are finding themselves in that struggle, Father, I pray that you would open their eyes to enable them to see where you are. That you might comfort them and you might help them and you might bring strength to them. Father, I pray you give us awareness this week of those that we might meet who are looking down and that we might bring hope and comfort to them. Father, I pray for all of the children that have their picture on a table at the back there, Father, you'd link them with a sponsor, someone who's going to love them, someone who's going to pray for them, someone who's going to give to them and change their lives. So, Father, thank you for your presence with us this morning. Thank you that this is a thin place and a thin place moment. That it's been good to be together. And we just come to you, Father, and we say thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.